Now, way, way back before we had space missions to give us clues as to how the planets and their oceans formed, we had folklore. In Ireland, weirdly, modern genetics is providing a new insight into the legends of the giant Finn McCool, whose antics gave an explanation of the region's geography. Brace yourselves for an unscientifically tall tale.
Stories are told of one great Irish giant, Finn McCool, whose most fearsome enemies were the Scottish giants. One day, he shouted a challenge to the Scottish giant Benan Donner. Finn scooped a huge clod of earth out of the ground to fling at the Scot. The hole filled up with water and became the biggest loch in Ireland, Loch Ness. The clod he flung missed its target and landed in the middle of the Irish Sea, where it became the Isle of Man.
Finn McCool may be the stuff of legends, but fellow Irishman Brendan Holland says there's fact and fiction here.
I think all legends have some element of truth in them. We do know that Northern Ireland, or this particular part of Northern Ireland, just on the western shores of Loch Ness, is associated with giants. In the early 1800s, there was graves discovered when a quarry undercut a local graveyard, and a number of coffins and bones came out, which were those of giants. There's no question about that.
Brendan from Dungannon in Northern Ireland is well placed to talk on this subject, being himself a giant.
I'm 6'9½". When I was diagnosed with this condition, I settled down at a height of 6'10½". I'm 64 years old now, so I'm sort of on the way down now rather than the way up.
Despite the several health problems caused by his gigantism, Brendan knows he's lucky to be living nowadays when there are experts to diagnose and treat his disease. Experts like Marta.
My name is Marta Korbenitz. I'm an endocrinologist at Barts and the London School of Medicine and Dentistry. The disease is due to usually a tumour of the pituitary gland making too much growth hormone. And this disease has been recognised in the last couple of hundred years, and the name was given to it at the end of the 19th century. And at the time, it wasn't clear that if this disease starts in childhood, will lead to gigantism, and if it starts in adults, it leads to a disease called acromegaly.
The traditional assumption was that cases of gigantism were one-offs. But Professor Korbenitz noticed that many cases could be linked back to the same area of Northern Ireland and set about showing that this rare condition could be inherited.
There are a couple of genes which can lead to pituitary gigantism, and one of them is called AIP. And this gene has been identified in 2006. And what we found a few years later, that there are a group of patients originally from Northern Ireland who have a particular mutation in this gene, and we realize that these patients are somewhat in a distant way related to each other, and not just to each other, but also to a patient whose skeleton is in one of the museums in London in the Royal College of Surgeons Hunterian Museum.
I should probably share the rather unpleasant story of that skeleton. In 1782, Charles Byrne, the Irish giant, arrived in London and became an instant celebrity. At 7'8", or 2 metres 35 centimetres, he was of huge interest to John Hunter, surgeon and obsessive collector of anatomical curiosities. Hunter wanted the giant's skeleton for his collection, but a horrified Byrne refused the offers of cash and decided to be buried at sea deliberately to avoid this fate. But Hunter wanted those bones, and when Byrne fell ill, had him followed until he died. Then, as his coffin was en route to the coast, Hunter's minions stole the body, replacing it with stones. The skeleton is now on display at the Hunterian Museum in London. Professor Korbenitz managed to find DNA on it, and yes, Charles Byrne has the same family mutation as Brendan Holland. In fact, he's the same family.
Yeah, I have confirmed evidence that I am related through our DNA.
So the link obviously was the origin from Northern Ireland. And when we realised in 2011 that we had a couple of families, we thought that could there be more?
The team's newest work attempts to establish how many people carry this particular mutation. Giants are easy to spot, but many more inherit the mutation with no outward effects. And besides, the point is to find this disease before it causes problems, which tend to start in late childhood. There seems to be a particular hotspot in Brendan's part of Ireland.
In the process of trying to find out how prevalent this condition was in the local population, I organised 2 screening exercises in their local supermarkets in Dungannon and Cookstown. And we screened, I think, 936 people.
Back in Professor Kobonitz's office, we pore over the map of Northern Ireland and a red-lined area where both Brendan and his ancestor Charles Byrne hail from.
Clearly, the highest number of cases are in this region, and we were really surprised that with this type of pituitary tumour in this region, there were actually higher number of patients with this unique mutation than without.
The astonishing thing is that this mutation is still so localised. Brendan's family is a textbook example of the odds of inheriting this mutation.
In my own case, I'm 1 of 8 siblings. 4 of my siblings do not carry the gene. The other 4 of us do, but I'm the only one that's affected. In 3 of the other 4, they have passed on the gene to their children. In my case, I've not passed on the gene to my children. So you can see the sort of haphazard way in which this gene works. We still don't know why I'm that 1 of 4, but, you know, that will come, and no doubt about that. We'll find that out later, you know.
The mutation is thought to have first appeared 2,500 years ago, and the job of scientists is to identify all the carriers, because catching and monitoring those with the mutation allows doctors to deal with the tumours before irreversible damage is done.
The real point of the exercise is that we identify the families where people can be screened and the ones who carry the mutation can be followed, so we can interfere at a stage, really early stage, and we can avoid the devastating consequences of the late presentation.
Those consequences for the Irish giant include being hung in a museum against his express wishes. I had to ask Brendan Holland how he feels about the skeleton of his ancestor Charles Byrne, once a living embodiment of the Irish giant legend, still being in a museum.
I have mixed feelings about this, because one part of me tells me that what else can his skeleton tell us about this condition? And then obviously the other part is, he's my blood relative and I would like to honour his wishes, but at the same time, what's left of his body is telling us things that we never dreamt it could have. But I think the argument comes down in the favour of what I would call the greater good. And the greater good is where you can help people who are alive.
My thanks to Brendan Holland and Professor Kobonitz for talking to me. I'm also lucky that broadcaster, author and Dr. Graham Easton has joined me in the studio. Graham, could you tell me a little bit more about the symptoms and cause of this form of gigantism?
Most cases are caused by a tumour in the pituitary gland, and that makes too much of this growth hormone. And if that happens before the bones have stopped growing, people obviously get exceedingly tall. And in fact, there are cases in the medical literature of 8 foot 11, 2 metres 72. People also get very large hands and feet, and particularly prominent foreheads and large jaws often. And that can cause all sorts of practical issues and psychological issues too. I mean, rings get tight, hats get tight, difficult to get clothes. But also, because growth hormone affects a range of organs and other tissues and other glands, there are a range of other health effects too. I mean, for example, tongues can get very large, which causes interference with the breathing. So people, particularly at night, can be snoring and stop breathing, with sleep apnea. But high blood pressure, diabetes, osteoarthritis, there's a whole range of problems. And finally, as well as the effects of the hormone on the body, there can also be effects of a large pituitary tumour pressing on things near the pituitary gland. For example, the visual systems causing visual loss or blurred vision, for example, headaches too. And occasionally women are affected by having problems with their periods and even infertility.
Okay, so lots and lots of reasons there why you'd want to catch this before
Absolutely.
It does damage. I mean, catching it before it does damage, how do you screen for that? What age should you screen?
Well, I think that the idea here, the principle that comes through with this research, is is screening and testing these populations where it's thought to be quite high prevalence, so that you can catch those people who carry the gene but don't have symptoms at an early enough age that they can be diagnosed and treated if they have it before the long-term effects kick in, before the irreversible effects kick in. And there's plenty that can be done. So surgery is often the way that this is dealt with and cures most of the cases, often surgery through the nose to remove the pituitary tumour, which is at the base of the brain. If you can't do the surgery, perhaps because it's not that clear cut where the tumour is or it's in a difficult position, then you can use medicines to block the effects of growth hormone or reduce the amount of growth hormone in the body. And then there are also possibilities of using radiation therapy, very targeted radiation therapy. So there's plenty that can be done to try and prevent some of these quite serious health problems.
Graham Easton, thank you so much for your 2 cents on that. That's it for Science in Action this week. It was produced by Fiona Roberts. More from us at bbcworldservice.com. Bye for now.